I want to speak about a mitzvah that took place this year that probably no one listening to the show actually did, but everyone had the opportunity to do. It could be that none of you actually knew that this mitzvah existed or that it was something that was possible to do. It's most nageah for Akiva, but it's nageah for everyone, really, to some extent. I actually, the reason why I'm talking about it is because I'm writing a chapter on it for Shem and Amor Chanukah next year, so you can get a sneak preview if it gets done in time. Fruit in Eretz Yisrael. So I don't know if everyone knows all the halachas. I'm going to give a brief run through before we get into the main subject of today's show. When you buy fruit, when you grow fruit, let's start with in Eretz Yisrael. There's lots of things you have to do before you can eat it. Yeah, people, lots of people over here have, if they have a backyard, they have fruit growing in the backyard. Kiva's probably got like a pomegranate tree in his backyard or something. Loads of people have. And you can't just pick fruit off the tree and eat it. For a start, the first 3 years, you're not allowed to get any benefit. That's called Orla. The fourth year is called Netaruvoy, which we'll talk about later, while our locks of Netaruvoy are. And then once you get to the fifth year and you can finally eat your fruit, you can't just eat all the fruit. You pick off, let's say, 100 fruits from your tree. First thing you have to do is take truma. Now, truma is, in a time, minatora, you have to take chito achas p'tei zakuri. You just take one little bit and that's enough. The rabbonim came along and they said you should take either 40th, the 50th, or 60th, which is more, depending on how generous you are, and you give it to a kohen. Nowadays, and the kohenim can eat it, but they have to eat it with tahara. And nowadays, kohenim are not tahor. Kohenim are tomimis. And until there will be a pora aduma, which can come and will sprinkle on them and they'll become tahor, they're going to be tomimis, and they're not allowed to eat truma. The reason why kohenim are very careful not to be near a dead body is not because they're not tomi. They are tomi. They're tomi already. There's a separate issa for a kohen to be around tumah. But every second a kohen is in a basic forest is over an issa, so he has to run out straight away. If he's in a room and a dead person drops there next to him, you don't say, oh, he's ready to become tomi. It's fine, he can stay there. He has to get out as fast as possible. So kohenim can't eat truma nowadays, and therefore we don't give truma to kohenim. We wrap it up and throw it away. But you still have to mafresh truma. All these halakas apply to fruit nowadays, pashas doraisa, just as much they applied in times of the Beis Hamikdash. So if you get fruit from your tree in the backyard in Eretz Yisrael, you have to take truma before you can eat it. Now, the reason why these halakas might be nageah for you is, I know in Europe, there's a major, major amount of imports from Eretz Yisrael when it comes to fruits. All the good fruit from Israel, when you live in Israel, you don't get any good fruit. All the good fruit from Israel goes to Europe. When you're in England, you go to the supermarket, pick up some fruit, look at the package, things like oranges and stuff like that, that happens the whole time, avocados, it says imported from Israel. Now, when you pick up fruit, wherever you are, if you're in America or in England or in Africa, it doesn't make a difference. If you have Israeli fruit, you have to take truma and all the other things we're going to explain soon before you can eat the fruit. So you have to take for truma nowadays with mekel because it's not going to go to a kohen and it's not going to get eaten. So Chazal said you should take a very, very small amount. So you take a tiny bit and separate it as truma. After you've taken truma, then the next stage is you have to take maisa. Maisa means a tenth. So if you have 100 fruits in your tree, you have to take 10 of those fruits and separate them as maisa. Now, in the time of the Beis Mikdash, maisa was given to Levim. But nowadays, the Chazanish said, since we don't actually know who the Levim are, people who claim they're Levim aren't necessarily Levim. Kohenim have a much better yichus, but Levim don't have such a good yichus. And since most fruit nowadays, unless we're talking about taking fruit from your own backyard, if you buy fruit from a store, even if it doesn't have a good heksher, it's not badai tevel. It's not that you definitely have to take from a meister. It's a sofik, because you don't know where it came from. It could be it came from a farmer, or even like a Mizrahi farmer. A lot of them take from his meister. Even people who aren't from, they're traditional. A lot of them take from a meister. So you don't take it towards bad, it's only a sophic. That being the case, someone who's not definitely a Levi cannot say, give me your Maisa, because you'll turn around to him and say, who says you're a Levi? A Maisa can actually be eaten by anyone. It doesn't have the same holiness as Truma. Therefore, you take away a tenth of the fruit and you can keep it for yourself and you can eat it yourself. But you have to separate it. From that tenth, so you had 100 fruits, you took a tiny bit off for Truma, then you take 10 fruits away for Maisa. From those 10 fruits, you have to take away another 10th and give that to a Kohen. That's called Truma's Maisa. So usually the Levi would do this. From the 10 apples that he receives, he'll take one apple, give it to the Kohen, and it has the same condition as Truma. So nowadays, a Kohen cannot eat it because he's not Tahor. So what you have to do is you wrap it up and you throw it away. Now, this is where it gets more complicated, the next stage, and this is what we're going to discuss. After you've taken Truma, and you've taken Maisa, and you've taken Truma's Maisa, there is another 10th that has to be taken from the original produce. So you had 100 fruits, there's another 10th that has to be taken from those fruits, another 10 fruits. So you'll end up with about 80% of your fruit left. That 10th, it depends what year of the Shemitah cycle you're holding in, what you do with it. So everyone knows that there's 7 years of Shemitah, and then it starts again, 1, 3, 5, 6, 7, 1, 3, 5, 6, 7, until it gets to the Yovel year, and then another cycle starts again from Shemitah, Shemitah, Shemitah. In years 1, 2, 4, and 5, okay, so everything apart from 3 and 6, 1, 2, 4, 5, then you take a 10th as Truma, as Maisa Sheni. Maisa Sheni is holy fruit. The Gemara it comes up the whole time in the Gemara because there's a machlokes whether you can use it to get married with and things like that. Is it kodosh or is it not kodosh? But what you have to do is take it to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim, b'tahara. That means you have to be tahor when you're eating it. And nowadays, people aren't tahor because everyone is tamei geis. So we have a big problem what to do with Maisa Sheni fruit. Once you've separated this fruit, the next 10th, you have to take it to Shulayim and eat the B'tahara, and you can't eat the B'tahara because we're not tall. That's in years 1, 2, 4, and 5. In years 3 and years 6, you don't take Maisa Sheni, you take something called Maisa Oni, which is given to poor people. Now, if it's Vadai Maisa Oni, you have to give it to a poor person, the poor person can eat it whatever he wants, however he wants. If we're talking about Sofik, that means you bought it from a store and it didn't have a good heksher, so you're just taking Maisa Oni just in case, then you're allowed to keep it to yourself and you don't have to give it to a poor person. The same principle we said before, because the poor person cannot claim it off you because I'm going to make well over it. Maybe I don't have to give it to you at all, and therefore you can eat it yourself. Now, so we have Maisa Sheni fruit. In years 1, 2, 4, and 5, you have Maisa Sheni fruit. What do you do with the Maisa Sheni fruit? You're meant to take it to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim, but you're Tomei, so you can't do that. So there is a principle that the Gemara discusses when you have fruit outside Yerushalayim. Let's say I've got loads and loads of fruit. I'm a farmer. I'm meant to take a 10th of all the fruit to Yerushalayim to eat it. That's crazy. How am I going to get it there? So the Gemara gives an answer. The Torah gives an answer. But you can transfer the Kedusha of the fruit onto a coin. Once the Kedusha is on a coin, what you did in those days is you took the coin to Yerushalayim and you used the coin to buy fruit in Yerushalayim and then you ate the fruit there. And in the times of the Beis Mikdash, you had to add on a fifth to the value. So let's say you had 10 fruits worth $10, then you transfer them onto $12 because you add on a fifth, take those $12 to Yerushalayim, buy fruit, and eat the fruit in Yerushalayim. And the Kedusha would pass along from the fruit to the coins to the other fruit. And the original fruit, you can eat whatever you want. And the coins, after you bought the fruit, you can do whatever you want with them. So nowadays, what people do, this happens the whole time in Eretz Yisrael daily, probably by the minute. And it happens also in other countries, let's say in England, when people buy fruit in a store and it has kedushas, needs to take Maisa Sheni from it. This is what people do. They take the fruit. Let's say I buy a pack of apples in a local supermarket. There's 10 apples there. So I have to take Truma, throw away, take Maisa, and I can eat that myself. And then I take Maisa Sheni. As long as you have to keep track of what year you're in. If you're in year 1, 2, 4, 5, you have to take Maisa Sheni. When you take that Maisa Sheni, what you do is you transfer the Kedusha of that Maisa Sheni onto a coin. So now the Kedusha from that Maisa Sheni is on a coin. And you have to keep track how much you're transferring. And there's a big kula. Chazal say that nowadays, when you're transferring food onto a coin, you do not need to do it the same value. You can transfer to a shava pruta. That means you can have a massive amount of fruit, you buy 500 apples and you're going to sell them in a wholesale thing, you can be mafresh a tenth of that, that's 50 apples, onto a shovel pruta. Shovel pruta in American terms is about 6 cents. Not a lot. In England, it's about 4 pence. So let's say you get a coin. I don't know how American coins work. You got there's a dollar coin. If there's a dollar coin, let's just say, for argument's sake, there's a dollar coin, and you take your dollar, and
you can. We have a dollar coin in Canada, by the way.
Okay, so you got your dollar coin. Every time you buy fruit, you can transfer. Let's say you buy apples, so you go onto 6 cents of that coin. So you can go about 25 times onto the same coin. You can keep transferring a bit less. 22 times onto the 20 times, 20 less, but 18 times onto the same coin, you can transfer onto your $1 coin. So let's say you buy apples and grapes and peppers and bananas and something else, then you can go everything onto that $1 coin. I said bananas, whoops, bananas. You can put everything onto that $1 coin and you're good. You can eat all the fruit. That is what people do. Now, there's one major complication. What to do with the coin we're going to discuss very soon, once it's full. But there's one major complication. The major complication is that all of this only works if the fruit that you're transferring is worth at least a pruta. So let's say you buy a single avocado. And that avocado you bought for $0.50. A tenth of its value is only 5 cents, which is less than a pruta. Less than a pruta, you can't put onto a coin. Unless that coin already has other maizesheni on it from more than a pruta. That means the first time you put money, you put fruit onto a coin, it has to be worth at least 6 cents. It has to be worth more than 6 cents. After that, you can put whatever you want onto it. Even if it's worth 2 cents, 1 cent doesn't make a difference. But the first time you transfer onto that coin, it has to be worth at least 6 cents. Now, this is a big problem, because the first time you transfer onto that coin, how do you know that the thing you're transferring was actually chayav in my sashim? If I just go to a supermarket and I buy an avocado, maybe this avocado came from some chassidish farmer in some moshav somewhere in Israel, and he took my sashim already. I'm only taking misofik. So if this my sashim was not my sashim, then it didn't go onto the coin as more than a shovel pruta. So when I buy my next avocado next week and it's only worth half a dollar, it's only worth 50 cents, and now I've got less than a shovel pruta to put onto this coin, who said that I can put it onto the coin? Because there's been nothing transferred onto the coin yet. That means that the first time I transfer something onto this coin, it has to be badai chayav in my sashini. And if it's not badai chayav in my sashini, I can't do the transfer. So what they do is, a lot of, in England, one of my brothers-in-law works for Federation based, and he set this up. And they do it in America as well, I think. There's something called a pruta chamura, which means that they get a coin which has all of the chumras possible, that it definitely has on it more than a shovel pruta ma'aser sheni transferred onto it already. So what they did, they got a £2 coin, and they took it to Israel, and they got a guy who had his own grapes in his back garden. Now, to be chayav d'oraisa, that means to get a real pruta chamura, it has to be either grapes, olives, or wheat, barley, oats, rye, spelt. One of those seven things. Because they're the only things that are chayav d'oraisa in ma'aser sheni. And it has to be the owner transferred onto his personal coin. Because if I transfer onto someone else's coin, the transfer only works to Rabban. And if I sell you produce and you transfer it, then you only chayav d'Rabban. So the owner has to put it onto a coin. So they sent a £2 coin to Eretz Yisrael, and there was someone who had grapes in his back garden, and transferred Ma'aser Sheni onto that coin. Now they kept that coin for the rest of time. Well, we're going to see how long they could keep it for. And any time that anyone buys fruit from a store in England, what they do is they send a text, because in England texting is kosher for some reason. They send a text saying Ma'aser to a certain number, and they make sure there's enough room left on the coin. And they put 4 pence onto the coin every single time. And they tell the guy, you can eat your fruit. So they transfer whatever fruit the guy's got. Let's say he buys apples, it'll go onto 4 pence in this coin. When the coin gets full, they transfer everything apart from the grapes. Everything that was transferred onto that coin, except for the grapes, they put onto another coin. And then that coin will be full of ma'aser sheni. What we do with these coins, I'll explain in a minute. And they keep doing that the whole time, the whole time. And they always make sure the grapes are on that coin. And therefore, anyone can put anything they want onto it, because even if it's worth less than the rice sashimi, it's already had a real transfer which was kind of the rice on it. That is what a Prutakamura is. So if you ever hear anyone talk about Prutakamura, now you know what it is. A coin that has Badai Mai Sashimi already on it. All of this applies to Mai Sashimi, and it also applies to Netta Ravoi, which means fruit from the fourth year of growth. If you know, I think Misophic, you don't have to assume it is. If you go to the supermarket, you don't have to assume it was grown in the fourth year. But if you know that it's grown in the fourth year, you have your own fruit in the back garden, you have to do the same thing. Because Midoraisa, you might have to take it to your Shalim and eat it there, but Tahara, and you can't do that. Therefore, you have to take the Kedusha and put it onto a coin. Now, this is where this year comes in. There's a chiyuv called Bior Maisus. It's a chiyuv d'oraisa, and it takes place in year 3 and year 6 of the Shemitah cycle. We are currently in year 6 of the Shemitah cycle. Hopefully next year you'll make it back to Yisrael, and you'll be experiencing Shemitah in Yisrael. It's not fun. It's quite complicated. You can't get hold of much fruit, and it's very expensive. And you have to be careful if you buy Shemitah fruit, what you do with it, and you have to like make sure you eat every single drop. And there's lots of complications. When you clean the floor, you have to make sure you don't brush the water outside. You can't drink water outside in case you spill some of it on the grass and you make things grow. All sorts of crazy rules. That will be next year. Next year will be Shemitah. But this year is year 6. Now in year 3 and year 6, before Pesach, that means any point from the beginning of year 3 up until Erev Pesach, year 6, you need to make sure that you get rid of any trumas and maisvos that you have in your possession. That means if you got trumi, you have to give it to a kohen. Nowadays, you put it in the garbage. If you got maisa, you have to give it to a levi. Nowadays, you can eat it yourself. Maisa sheni, though, if you have a coin of maisa sheni, you have to make sure you take it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. But nowadays, we can't eat all maisa sheni in Yerushalayim. So what do? So the simple etzah is, if you live in Eretz Yisrael, you can take the coin and throw it into the Dead Sea. Yeah, the Gemara gives the etzah. That is a form of bio. You have to destroy all your trumas and maisos, and you say something called vidu maisa when you do it. Nowadays, you don't have to say it. You say something called vidu maisa when you do it. I'm getting rid of all of my trumas and maisos. You take the coin and you throw it into the Dead Sea. The reason why the Dead Sea, I think, is because it's saltier than the other season. It destroys the coin. Yes, Yudi?
Why are we doing beer, Meiser?
Again?
Why are we doing this beer, Meiser, in 3 and 6?
The Torah says that in years 3 and 6, you have to make sure that you've sorted all your trumas and meisers out. That means if you've got stuff sitting in your back room, the trumas that you separated ages ago that you didn't sort out yet, you need to make sure you sort out before Pesach in year 3 and 6. Torah said so. Yeah, you might not know that locker, now you do. It's that locker that applies nowadays as well, just as much as it applied in those days. You have to get rid of trumas and maisers before Pesach in years 3 and 6. So, I've got a brother-in-law, the one who came to speak in yeshiva. This is the third brother-in-law I mentioned this year. Wow. I've got about 10 of them. So, the guy who came to speak in yeshiva on Chanukah. So, he wasn't having much luck using this Meister text service of my other brother-in-law because it never worked fast enough for him. So he made his own Prutakamura, and he had his own coin, which had mice on it. And he realized about 3 days before Pesach, I need to get rid of this coin. And he didn't know what to do with it. He happened to be in the Dead Sea not long before that, about a month or two before that. And he was very upset with himself that he didn't bring it with him, because he remembered while he was there, I should throw it into the sea, but he didn't have it with him. So what do you do with that coin? You can't give it to Stocker because someone might use it. You can't allow that coin to ever be used. So what do you do with it? So some people say you can put it into a regular sea. However, once he realized this, he was already living in London in year 2020, when you can't just go to the sea to throw coins in it because no one's allowed to leave the houses. So this year, there was a particular problem in how to get rid of the coins. So one suggestion is to destroy the coin. That means that if you destroy the coin to the point that it's no longer useful, you can't use it anymore for as legal tender, then it doesn't exist as far as money is concerned, and you're yotzei your chiyuv bio. So you can destroy the coin. However, there was a big problem with this. It's actually, in England, illegal to destroy coins. There's something called the Coinage Act, which was made in 1971, that no person shall, except under the authority of a license granted by the Treasury, melt down or break up any metal coin, which is either works now or has worked since the year 1969. That's the halakha in England. So if you smash this coin or break it in some way or melt it, then you're over a dinner of Makos Adina, it's a Geneva or whatever it is, it's also against halakha, and it'll be a mishnah bar baviru, and you're not allowed to do it. Now in America, it seems that there isn't actually an issa of destroying coins. There is an issa in America of destroying banknotes. Yeah, there's something called burning money. You know, people talk about burning money. People do it as like a political statement and things like that. It's illegal to burn money in America. There was in under the 18 USC mutilation of national bank obligations. It says that anything that is a note, a bill of any type, you're not allowed to burn it or destroy it. It comes under the same category as burning flags and stuff like that. Because it's got a picture of whoever it is, right? Donald Trump, I don't know who they got on their bills there. So you're not allowed to destroy bills in America. But coins doesn't seem to be a problem. And in England, you're allowed to destroy bills. The opposite of America. There is a Currency and Banknotes Act, which was made in 1928, which says that you're not allowed to deface bills. That means if you've got a bill with a picture of the Queen on, you can't make her have a mustache or something like that. In England, it's actually illegal to put a stamp on upside down on a letter. I think it's treason. It's punishable by death or something. So you're not allowed to deface a bill, but you're allowed to rip it up. You're allowed to burn it. So I came up with an answer that maybe you could transfer in England, if you've got a coin, you could transfer the kedusha of the coin onto a bill. And in America, if you've got a bill, you could transfer the kedusha of the bill onto a coin. However, this goes into a big sugya because, and then once it's on that thing, you can just destroy it. It goes into a big sugya. There's Gemara at the beginning of Hazov, which is the fifth parak of the fourth parak of Bar Metzia. The Gemara discusses over there, there's a whole machlokes. What is better, gold or silver? That's basically what the machlokes is. The Mishnah, the beginning of Hazov, is talking about when you make a kinyan. Let's say that I want to trade with you cash and you want to give me fruit. So the kinyan is always made on the fruit. So I pick up the fruit and you get the cash. That is how it works. Either midrash or midrabbanan, it's machlokes. What happens if I'm not trading cash for fruit? I'm trading cash for cash. So I want to trade my gold for your silver. What is considered the fruit? What is the currency and what is the item being purchased? Do we look at the gold as being the money because it is more valuable? Or do we look at the silver as being the money because it's more chorif? That means it's easier to use in the marketplace. People more readily accept $5 in silver than you will $5 in gold because it's much easier to use. It's more readily acceptable. That's the machlokes over there in the Mishnah. And the Gemara makes a comparison between the halakha and the halakha of Maisa Sheni. Because Maisa Sheni, the way it works is that outside Yerushalayim, when you're doing a transfer, you always have to go from fruit onto coins. Because like we said, the whole point is I got too many fruits. I put them all onto my coin. I take my coin to Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, I buy fruit and I eat it there. So outside Yerushalayim, you always have to go from fruit to coin. So the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Hillel, whether you can transfer from silver coins onto gold coins, my sheni, or whether you could do the other way around, or whether you can do copper onto silver, every single different case is discussed. Now, what we have to decide is what is more valuable, what's more chorif, a bill or a coin? Let's say you've got coins in England, you've got coins in America, and you've got bills in America, and you want to switch on to the other one so that you can destroy it. So I think you could argue both ways. On the one hand, a bill, people prefer to have bills. I personally prefer to have bills in my wallet because they're much lighter and they're much easier to carry around. But if you have a bill and a coin that are worth exactly the same amount, what is better? So a bill isn't actually worth any money. It's representative of money. It's a piece of paper. A coin is worth a bit of money, but even nowadays, it's not worth its real value. It's worth a bit less, I think. Check it up. I should have checked that up beforehand. But I think a coin is not worth its real value. It definitely doesn't have the intrinsic value, but I don't think it's even worth its real value. Now, if that's the case, maybe you could time that a bill, which is more preferable for people to have, I think, I know you can argue on that point, I think it's more preferable for people to have bills, maybe you can transfer the coin onto the bill. On the other hand, in which case in England, you'll be in luck because you can put your coin onto your bill and then you can rip it up and you haven't been over any issue. In America, if you start off with a bill, then maybe you could tell me you could put it onto a coin because a coin has more intrinsic value. A bill is just a piece of paper. So maybe you can, it's like stepping up a level. You can put it onto the coin and then you can smash the coin to pieces. In Ed Store, by the way, in Yeshiva, they had this minig. I don't know if they did it this year, but they were busy doing it last year. They put the coins onto the railway so the train will go over it and they got flattened. So flattening a coin is not actually also in England. I don't know about in Ed Store. Flattening a coin is not also, but like those penny machines that flatten the coins, they're not also, but if you destroy it by breaking or melting or something like that, that is when you're over an issa. So these are some possible solutions to what you could do on Erev Pesach nowadays. The Chazon Ish came up with another solution, and I don't understand it myself. It must be very b'diavad. If you don't have anything else to do, if you live in a place where it's illegal to smash coins and it's illegal to tear up notes and bills, sorry, and you can't get anywhere near the sea to throw into the sea and you can't get to the Dead Sea, then he gives an eitzah like this. You take the coin, and this is what my brother-in-law was told to do by his brother. Take the coin, transfer the kedusha of the coin onto sugar. That is the dodgy part because you're going from money to Paris. Outside Yerushalayim, you only really meant to go from Paris to money. Over here, you go from money to Paris. That's what he told you to do. Take the coin and put it on sugar. Take the sugar, dissolve it in water, and then throw it down the drain. And that sugar will never ever be seen again. It's completely destroyed and you won't be able to get it back ever again. So that is another way of destroying money. But this is the mitzvah that many people did on Erev Pesach this year. It could be you missed out on it. You can do it in 4 years' time on the third year of the next Shemitah cycle to destroy money of Ma'aseh Sheni before Zman Biur.